Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Area 45 with Bijani and Creighton.
Area 45, Sports Radio 610. I'm Patrick Creighton alongside Chris Partee.
Yep.
Sean Bijani, lazy as usual, not coming to work. Actually out on vacation, staying at a resort.
Enjoying himself.
No, not thoroughly. Enjoying himself. On social media, bitching and moaning about the resort he's staying at. Not being bougie enough for his bougie ass. Chris Santiago on the other side of the glass and the incomparable, the general John McClain with us on the guest line. John, we were talking about Texans and, you know, we asked you about, C.J. Stroud. And Chris asked you about the defense. Is the most important person for the Texans this year Nick Caley?
Everybody would say that, but if Cole Popovich doesn't do his job, it's not going to matter what Nick Caley does. Just ask Bobby Slowick. If you don't have your offensive line playing better than last year, they're not going to run Caley after his first year, of course. But if you don't have your offensive line fixed, then Nick Caley's not going to be able to put the offense out on the field that he wants to. So I contend, and I know I'm in the minority, including by those complaining at resorts when they ought to be putting a lid on it, that because nobody's going to feel any sympathy at all. And so I think that it's Cole Popovich. And watching the other day, the lineup they have, and I think we'll see many changes. And I don't think, because starters won't play a lot in preseason, I think it won't just be the first game. I'll bet you the five starters they put out for the first game of the Rams won't be, even barring injuries, the same one they put out a quarter to end of the season. They just got too many new players, and linemen need to hit. Linemen need they rely so much on communication based on what the defense does, and you can't do it when you're not hitting anybody on defense. And that's why the two joint practices will be great for the offensive line. The preseason will be good for a guy like Ariante Ursary, their second-round pick, and Blake Fisher going into his second season. But, man, Cole Popovich and Caley, they have got their work cut out. I look at wide receivers, and they're going to have new ones, but I like their wide receivers. You know, what they need more than anything is Nico Collins to stay healthy for the first time in his career. And that would be tremendous because he's capable of 90 to 100 catches and 1,500 yards and double-digit touchdowns because he's outstanding. But he has to stay on the field. And I love watching him and Jaden Higgins together because they both look like small forwards now to be attacking the basket. And they just – it's going to be hard with corners not any bigger than they are to stick with two guys who are, say, over 6'4".
What kind of role do you see – you talked about receivers there. What kind of role do you see Christian Kirk playing coming in his first year with the Texans? Number two, number three guy, what do you think?
He'll be the slot receiver. And I think right off the bat we'll say Jalen Null be just when they – play four receivers, which they might do a lot. I'd rather see them playing four receivers than multiple tight ends because last year, overall, Cade Stover flashed a little as a rookie. Then he got hurt. Jordan Schultz did not play. Schultz did not play as well last season as he played the year before. They need him to come back in a big way, and it would just be great if Brevin Jordan could stay healthy the whole season, because he's like a big wideout. You know, he showed in that Cleveland playoff game what he's capable of doing when he gets the ball in his hands, but he's been hurt too much because he's an undersized tight end. But it's the wide receivers with the addition of Kirk in the second and third round picks. It's going to be fun to watch. And maybe in the third season, which is when Xavier Hutchinson emerges. It took Nico Collins three seasons, and he's another guy with a good size. I'm just guessing they might try to unload John Metchie the third and get a draft choice because I thought last year he would have turned it around. This training camp and preseason seemed to be make or break for me with him with the Texans, barring injuries, and they have to keep him.
John, you mentioned Dalton Schultz there. Like, what is there something that you could point to that you could attribute his basically fall off last season from the season before?
Absolutely not. He didn't block like he did the year before. When he was in Dallas, they complained that he didn't block. He wasn't a good blocker. And then what I saw was from him in 23, and you guys saw it, he blocked his tail off. And I would tell friends of mine that covered the Cowboys, I said, man, he is making a huge effort, and that's because they really demanded. And he made the effort. He just wasn't as good, and he wasn't as dangerous when he had the ball. And Schultz has showed multiple times in his career that he's capable of being an above-average tight end, not a great one 2 years ago. C.J. Stroud had a lot of confidence in him in clutch situations, and last season he just was another guy in those clutch situations. So this is very important for him to step up and stay up.
Talking with the General John McClain with us on the guest line. You already answered part of my question, which was, you think John Metchie is going to be traded out of town? You know, they've got, you know, this grouping with Metch and Hutch and
Jared Wayne.
Well, you got the kid from Kansas City who's got the three Super Bowls.
Watson,
and then you have Braxton Berrios, who didn't play a full year last year. He only played like six games, but that's a guy who's been an All-Pro returner before. You know, if you take that grouping of four, only two of them realistically stand to make the team. Who do you think are the two most likely to make the team?
I hope it's Berrios. I hope he stays at least through training camp. And I think Xavier Hutchinson, because he's a real good special teams player. Y'all didn't pick up on that, did you? I think Xavier, because he's big and he's strong and he has flashed, I thought he'd do better last year because he got more opportunities. I thought Metchie would do better last year. Robert Woods did well enough to get another job, but they're young at wideout. I think if Christian Kirk can stay healthy, based on the way he's played when he's healthy, he's going to be a terrific addition. You know, we've seen him burn the Texans many times, and you know he'll have a lot of fans and friends here from College Station, and he's going to want to put on a show. Berrios would have to make the team as a return guy, and like the last receiver. He's a seven-year veteran, and I don't think with injuries that he'll make the team. But and injuries, of course, will play a role. But, man, they got some talent now with Kirk and Higgins and Noel.
Talking with John McClain, the general with us on the guest line. John, let's switch gears and talk about Houston Astros, who, after a surprise, slow start, have found their way back up near the top of the division. And this is a month where they're going to have a lot of teams that they can kind of make some hay against. And we've seen, look, Fromber is Fromber, and Hunter Brown's a Cy Young candidate. Lance McCullers Jr. has kind of found exactly what kind of pitcher he is going to be and has looked really sharp his last couple of starts. The rest of the rotation's a lot of, you know, young guys who are AAA pitchers and struggling to make it through five innings. How long do you think the Astros can continue with the same guys? Do you think they make a move? How fast before they make a move?
If the Mariners keep getting swept by the lowly Orioles, then they'll stay in it till the end. The Rangers are not doing squat. The Angels are better, but they're not a threat. And the poor old A's. They've just gone off the deep end. Their bullpen's worst. They've given up the most home runs. They play in a terrible ballpark. You know, that owner, That owner, John Fisher, he somehow they ought to make that guy sell. He is a pathetic excuse for an owner, what he's forcing his players to do. No wonder they're going to be bad, but they got young talent. They keep stockpiling them and then trading them. So I'll say this about the Astros, and I think they're still in a rain delay. As great as they were in the first game at Pittsburgh on Tuesday, and Lance McCullers is, to me, may turn out to be the greatest comeback in the history of Houston sports. I thought he would never pitch again. He's had multiple surgeries. You know, he has come at just the right time with three of your five starters out, two for the season, one. We don't know when Spencer Arrighetti's coming back. McCullers has been a godsend for this team. And what he's done in the last two starts is just amazing. And I'll say this, the medical staff and the trainers who took so much heat for Yordan Alvarez, as they deserve, they've done a tremendous job with Lance McCullers Jr. and should get some praise for it. And it's amazing that they're in first place, considering Altuve, Diaz, and Christian Walker are hitting so far under what they usually do. Yes, Altuve's hit 9 home runs. Walker's hit 7. Walker had come close to playing the way that he played with Arizona the last 3 years. I don't know what's happened to Diaz after 299 last season. Victor Caratini is hitting so much better than he is. Jeremy Pena, Jacob Myers, Victor Caratini, and, of course, Cam Smith, because he wasn't here, they're hitting better than expected. The other guys have not. Right when you keep thinking Altuve is going to get his average back up, he'll have an 0-for. Right when you think Christian Walker hits a home run, he'll go 1-for-10. I don't know what it is that Walker's had trouble adjusting. And the biggest surprise to me is Jake Myers. I thought he might be lucky to hit 210, and maybe he will. But, man, I read a story about what he changed, and that was good coaching that he received. And right now he's been a strength instead of a weakness.
John, why is this team so notoriously inconsistent when it comes to managing players and their injuries? You kind of alluded to it there a second ago.
Chris, if I knew that, I would call Jim Crane, and I would say, Jim, what would it be worth to you to know what your problem is about players coming back? I've always said Justin Verlander, Patrick, you may have tweeted this, I retweeted it, that Justin Verlander pitched one game, had to have Tommy John surgery, missed two seasons. I don't know where he got the surgery, but he spent most of his rehab with his wife, and I don't blame him. Maybe in California.
Cannot blame him.
And he came back and won a Cy Young Award. You know, we still haven't seen Luis Garcia. He should have already been back. We're not going to see Christian Javier this season, maybe next season, although they're making noise. He could be back in August. I think that's just to get people excited. You know, Wisniewski, he's gone for 2 years. Ronel Blanco, he's 31, and he's going to be gone for 2 years. And there's almost every pitcher is going to have Tommy John surgery just because the way they pitch. The key is the rehab. Who oversees it? Do you attack it the way you're supposed to? And I know this, whoever operated on Verlander, I want him operating on my elbow, and whoever brought him back, I want that person is the one that I'm going to train with to bring me back.
It's funny because I remember when Verlander was rehabbing in Florida, how the narrative being pushed around was, oh, Verlander's not a team guy. He could be with the team and rehabbing, but he's in Florida rehabbing. Well, Verlander got it right. Apparently, the guys who have been with the team rehabbing,
working out.
Lance and Garcia, soon to be Christian Javier, JP France. Garcia's had, what, 6 setbacks since May of last year, and his current timetable is maybe the end of July, early August, which is the same as Christian Javier's, assuming he has 0 setbacks. I have negative faith. Not even 0. I have negative faith.
Well, you would have to, based on the recent history.
That Javier's not going to have some kind of setback between now and August. Like, just no set chance whatsoever.
Would anybody bet that he'll be back by August? I sure wouldn't.
No, I wouldn't even.
No money on that. No, definitely not.
Here's what I want to ask you about, John. Chandler Rome did a piece in The Athletic today that Jose Altuve will stay the left fielder even though Jacob Melton has been called up. Since Melton has been called up, he has been in the starting lineup all five games in the outfield, and Jose Altuve has played zero games in the outfield. He's played second base three times and DH'd the others. He was slated to DH tonight. If Jacob Melton winds up being hitting well and showing he belongs, does Jose Altuve go back to second base?
When I watch the Astros and I watch every game, and when they lose, I don't go, oh, my God, they lost that game because Altuve played second. Sometimes I may go, oh, my God, Altuve's the worst base runner I've ever seen who's a great player. There's no doubt. He is a terrible base runner. I say that all the time, and I know you guys, every person that watches the Astros knows he's a terrible base runner. But I don't see ground balls going through his legs. I don't see look out there and see, oh, he's 35. He can't play second anymore. You got to get your best people in the lineup. You know, when Alvarez comes back, if he comes back this season, yeah, he's going to stay at DH. And so then you got to keep Caratini in the lineup because he hits. And if Diaz is not hitting, I'd play Caratini over Diaz. And I'd say, hey, bud, it's what you've done for me lately. And right now you ain't doing it. And thing about Altuve, every time a ball's hit the left field, I hold my breath. I don't hold my breath when balls are hit to second base.
That makes a lot of sense. John, real quick before we get you out of here, NBA Finals underway. Who you got in the series? Pacers, Thunder?
You got to go with OKC. Best team by far during the season. They got the MVP. And I think if the Pacers could win two games, that'd be great. But this is a dominating team, especially at home.
He is General John McClain with us on the guest line. Kind enough to join us on Thursday this week because some idiot got sick yesterday. That would not be John or Chris.
Who was that?
rhymes with Schmee.
Well, by the way, guys, I will not be on next week because four of us will be going to Key Largo, Florida to interview Jimmy Johnson for our Prairie View Interscholastic League documentary. High school football in Texas before integration because he played in the UIL at Port Arthur when the PVIL school there, Jefferson, put out some of the best players in our history. And he also was called the best player on the best player on Corpus Christi Miller played in 1960 when it became the first high school champion that was integrated. And they had a great game in the semifinals and won 6-0. And that coach told us, kept talking about Jimmy Johnson. We called him up and said, Jimmy, we'd like to come to Key Largo and interview you. So we're headed over there next week, and I'll let you guys know how it goes.
Thanks for reminding me. Yes. I got to get my plane ticket.
Unless you can move me to Friday night. And then I'm moving all my shows during the week to Fridays. And if you guys got room for me, I'll be happy to do it and tell you all about Jimmy and our trip.
That sounds awesome. We'll work on that for you.
Definitely want to hear about that.
All right, guys.
That.
Thank you very much.
All right. Appreciate Thanks, you, John. Take care. The General John McClain with us on the guest line in his weekly spot. Always appreciate him.
Definitely.
News we got. Number one, Astros Pirates expected to start about 9 p.m.
Expected.
Start about 9 p.m. That just flashed across the screen.
Let's see if that holds up.
Number two, in reference to my bougie, lazy, normal co-host, Sean Bajani.
Hey, what's going on with Bajani?
My guy, Tony. Tony! Viking Carpet One, the sponsor of our program, said, the reason Sean's upset is because he did not ask the master of resort vacations where to go or run where he was going by me. He could have even spoke to Santiago, who's on the same page as myself. Lazy, complaining, amateur yacht master.
Well, dang.
Right?
I mean, facts?
Tell us how you really feel.
For real.
Hot Leads coming up next.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
These are the new leads.
Now look, I need the leads.
These are the Glengarry leads.
Two lead cards for tonight, two lead cards for tomorrow.
Why give him the good leads?
He's got the leads.
He's got the leads.
He's got the good leads.
The whole thing is the leads.
They stole the Glengarry leads.
Let's talk about something important. Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
Time for the leads. Number one, are the Steelers doing everything in their power to ruin Mike Tomlin's streak of no losing seasons? Aaron Rodgers is going to sign with the Pittsburgh Steelers, according to all of the reports.
All the sources. Not Bajani's, but all the other sources.
Yes, the actual sources, including people whose names rhyme with A. Darn Schefter. The uncertainty around the player, the team, they are all put to rest here. You know, Aaron Rodgers doesn't like doing any kind of preseason work.
Of course.
You know, he wants to go be in a dark room somewhere.
He shouldn't have to. Him of all people? Work out before the regular season? Of course not.
Hey, at...
Why should he need to do that?
At 41... a year removed from a blown Achilles. I mean, needing to learn a new system.
Yeah.
Why is he showing up again?
Exactly.
Take the Steelers to 100% lose game one of the season, by the way.
100%.
Now, the Steelers have kind of been locked in on Rodgers for a long time. Tomlin claims he's happy to work with Rodgers' timeline. He's lying.
I don't buy that at all.
He's lying.
There's no way.
He's lying.
Not buying it.
Rodgers told Pat McAfee, I'm not stringing anyone along. I'm not holding anyone hostage. He's lying. But it is finally done. Aaron Rodgers and the Steelers. Will the Steelers finish under 500?
I'm going to say yes. 8-9. I'll give them 8 wins. The general gave him 9. I'm going to give him 8. I just don't buy into Aaron Rodgers. I know they've got a pretty good defense still, but Aaron Rodgers, I've been on. He had a decent year last year, but I just don't see it. That offense has already struggled without him. I don't think he's going to make them much better.
Another year older, off that injury. Like, even if you think he had a decent year last year, everything says to me he will be worse this year. Like, when you have a catastrophic injury in an advanced age,
yeah,
you tend, like for example, how old was Justin Verlander when he suffered a torn UCL?
In
that
his 30s.
First year back, he was a badass. And then what happened? The injuries start piling up.
Yeah.
And piling up because you don't get healthier as you get older.
Unfortunately.
It's
bad.
It's wrong.
It is bad.
As Uncle Tony used to say, it's wrong.
It's bad, man.
It's facts. A Met star suffered an injury. Frankie Lindor has a fractured toe, but it's his right pinky toe after he got hit by a pitch yesterday. But for now, the Metropolitan's not putting him on the IL. Manager Carlos Mendoza saying he is day-to-day, just like the rest of us.
Were they just going to tape it up?
He said, if I can tolerate the pain, I'll play. If I can't, then guess I can't play. It happened in the first inning last night when Tony Gonsolin bounced a slider off his foot leading off the game. He did stay in the game and play all 9 innings. But I can tell you with a fractured pinky toe, it probably swelled up when he took his foot out of the shoe.
Oh, you know it did.
Which means you were not putting it back in.
Anytime soon.
Lindor said the pain is worst when he puts on his shoes.
Yeah.
He said he expects it'll be a nagging thing that takes about 6 weeks to heal. When he does kind of get past all the pain, He expects to be a shortstop and not a DH, but probably will doing some DHing.
Let's not downplay a pinky toe. It's very important to stability while you're out there on the field.
Especially if you're, you know, at a position like shortstop where you've got to cut from one way to the other.
Pivot and quickly,
or
yeah.
Somebody sliding into your foot at second base.
Yeah.
You got to jump over a guy and land on your foot.
You don't think someone's going to go at that toe, at that foot that the toe is on? Yeah.
Or what happens if you're in the batter's box and you get hit there
again? Yeah. Not going to be good.
But they're going to try to figure it out. Luis Angel Acuña got the start for Lindor. Today, Ronny Mauricio could also be an option, but Lindor not being at 100% certainly hurt the Metsies.
Just a little bit.
Number three, Cheap Sox no more. Jerry Reinsdorf has entered into an agreement with billionaire private equity investor Justin Ishbia to be in line to be the next owner of the Chicago White Sox.
Uh-oh.
The 47-year-old Ishbia and 89-year-old Reinsdorf have entered into a long-term agreement where Ishbia could take over the team as early as 2029 or as late as 2034.
Okay.
Immediately, he'll be putting capital infusions into the White Sox as a limited partner, paying down the team's debt while supporting team operations. From 29 to 33, Reinsdorf has the option to sell controlling interest to Ishbia. If the deal isn't done by then, Ishbia has the option to take over the team in 2034. Until that time, Reinsdorf will continue to be the primary and managing owner of the team. Now, you might recognize the last name Ishbia.
Of course.
He is the brother of Matt Ishbia, the owner of the Phoenix Suns. And Matt will also be part of the group, as will their dad, Jeff, all be investors in the Chicago White Sox. Ishbia, of course, made his fortune as founder of the Chicago-based Shore Capital Partners. Reinsdorf, of course, also the owner of the Chicago Bulls. What I was looking for in this article, and it doesn't say, is what happens if Jerry Reinsdorf, who's 89 years old, does not live long enough to go through the agreement?
That's a really good question.
It doesn't say.
It doesn't mention that.
But
there's got to be something in there. I'm just in the deal. There has to be something in there. But like you said, he is 89 years old. It can happen at any time.
There is a path here for them to no longer be the Cheap Sox, owned by notorious tightwad Jerry Reinsdorf in the third biggest city in the country, acting like they're paupers.
There is a path in place, but it sounds like it's still going to be a few more years at the least of the Cheap Sox and just being horrible.
Possibly.
At least a few more years.
No bullets in this AR-15. Anthony Richardson on the sideline with a shoulder injury.
Like a super soaker right now.
Which, of course, means right now Daniel Jones has the leg up in the starting quarterback competition.
Daniel Jones just keeps popping up, doesn't he?
So Richardson aggravating the shoulder joint that he injured in 2023. He did have a procedure on the shoulder, and it is still giving him trouble. This is considered a major setback for Richardson, specifically amid the quarterback battle with Daniel Jones. For Daniel Jones, this will be the first time he has an offensive line as a professional. Full stop. This will be the first time he has more than one receiver as a professional, full stop. And maybe the first time he has a coach who knows how to truly utilize a quarterback with legs, because Daniel Jones actually is a very good running quarterback.
He is.
He also happens to be a lot more accurate in the pocket than one Anthony Richardson. Right now, if you had to wager on it, Daniel Jones starting quarterback, Indianapolis Colts, yay or nay?
Ooh. based on the injury status and a major setback, I'd say yay. Like, to start week one, I'd say yay.
So I actually had yay on this before I knew about the injury. But now I really have yay on this.
Yeah. But just the fact that Richardson is in a quarterback battle with Daniel Jones, that says so much.
Actually, I think this will be Daniel Jones' best season.
You think so?
He's finally going to have protection. Just that alone. When you're not just getting your ass kicked every single snap. That alone changes everything for a quarterback.
Again.
The fact that he will have receivers, more than one, maybe that actually stay healthy, makes a big deal.
That was an issue in New York. That was a little bit of an issue.
I mean, the one year the Giants got to the postseason,
yeah,
Saquon stayed healthy the whole year, which is a miracle because that offensive line is straight ass. And Daniel Jones was throwing passes to a guy the Giants were contemplating waving last season, and then he wound up being like among their top receivers, and they extended him. but like they were going to waive the guy who he threw the most passes to, because you know the Giants are—they're
a mess. Like just
they are a steaming pile of you know what. And if it wasn't for the Jets, they'd be a laughing stock. And if it wasn't for the Browns, they'd both be laughing stocks. All right, last one here, Lion. Now, you know what? This one's better. A legend tells the New York Knicks, Rick Pitino, when asked if he'd be interested in coaching the Knicks again, said, absolutely not. Pitino, now the head coach of the St. John's Red Storm. I almost call them the Red Men, their traditional name, but we're not allowed to say that anymore.
Not anymore.
Was asked during the broadcast yesterday between the Yankees and the Guardians, or as we know them, the Slumlords and the Flying G's, asked if he had any interest in becoming the Knicks head coach. He said, absolutely not. I think whoever comes in, if he doesn't get to the finals, it's going to be deemed an unsuccessful season. So whoever comes in has got so much pressure on them to take this team to the next level, because that's why they're doing it, obviously, in their minds. After Tuesday, the Knicks firing coach, Tom Thibodeau. Rick Pitino, the Johnnies are going to be his last job. Yay or nay?
How old is Rick Pitino?
72.
Okay. I'm going to say nay. I can see Pitino coaching longer. And I'm not even sure if I believe that he's actually not interested in the Knicks job. I'm not sure if I completely 100% believe him when he says that.
Oh, I don't think he wants any part of that job.
You don't?
Because that's a no-win scenario. That's win the title, you failed. And that team may not be good enough to win a title.
But they might. You don't think they're good enough to at least get there, to get to the finals? I mean, that's still...
This was probably their best year to do that. And they didn't get there. So next year, are they going to be better or worse next year? I'm going to say probably not as good.
I got to see what they do this offseason. There's a lot of rumors around the Knicks and who might go, who might stay. Obviously, got to bring a coach in.
But as you say, Knicks gonna Nick.
That's true.
And those are the leads. Coming up next, we will talk with the head coach of the Houston Roughnecks, C.J. Johnson. We'll get to him next.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Stay cool. Be acting like a fool. Put you in your spot. He is the head coach of your Houston Roughnecks. He is CJ Johnson. What's up, coach?
How you doing?
What's going on, Coach?
Tell you what, we're doing as good as you guys are doing. Winners of four of your last six. You finish, start 1-3, finish 5-5. Strong finish to the season for your team. Getting a big win on the road, get to 500 on the season. Just to get started, want to get your thoughts on the progression of your team from where you were at the beginning of the year. It was a tough loss week one, and you said to us after that game that you felt this was the best team that you'd had over the last couple of years, that this team was going to be a lot better, and then they got a lot better as the season went on.
You know what? It was a tale of two cities as far as our team was. It was a satisfying season, but it wasn't enough. You know, you look at how we came along. You know, one thing about those guys, they really bought in. I mean, I thought our coaches did an outstanding job with, you know, getting them prepared, buying them in. And the games we did lose, you know, it was with the exception of the first game, everything was real close. And I thought after we got over the hump, I thought we were better. Had a couple of disappointing losses in between. But, man, I'm proud of them. But, man, there's a lot more meat on the bone with that team.
Coach Chris Bartzee here. So, again, like Patrick said, great way you guys ended the season. You turned things around after a slow start there. But what needs to happen to take that next step? So you finished 5-5, barely missed the playoffs. But what needs to happen all season, getting into next season camp and everything, for you guys to take that next step to make the playoffs next year?
I think it starts right now. I think what we're doing now, everyone has an assignment. We're talking to OTA guys, and we're talking to guys that we could get the one or two players that could probably get us over the hump. I'd love to see another offensive lineman, you know, a rush in that could get a guy on the ground. You know, another receiver, another, you know, just positions where, you know, you say, God, if I had one more of those, you know, you would say, you know, you look at the Birminghams, the Michigans, you know, they all have those St. Louis. They got those extra DC, got the extra one or two players that I don't think we did a good enough job getting those guys. And then it kind of starts with, you know, when we come to camp, I gotta, you know, ramp this thing up, you know, give them a little time to rest, but ramp it up, because I thought we started slow because we didn't come together quick enough. You know, we got to be on them a little bit more as coaches, you know, making sure they're getting in shape, making sure they understand what we're trying to get accomplished with the playbook, and just making sure they're coming in with the right attitude. And I think if we do this, we do those things, I think we'll be a playoff team next year.
Coach, you know, Jalen McClendon wasn't your starter this year. In fact, you went through two other quarterbacks first. But your thoughts on how he did this season, and do you hope to have him back next year?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I thought he was outstanding. You know, it was a good competition, and we went by the numbers, and his numbers weren't what they were during the season. And, you know, we went through the other two guys, and, you know, one got hurt, another one kind of went getting it done a little bit. And when we turned to him, man, I thought the ball got out of his hand. You know, he really hit, you know, threw some great completions. And he really threw it down the field well. And that's one thing that I'm most excited about him. He's one of these guys that can, you know, he can get it down the field for you. You know, as you see, he's on Keys and Butler and Kiki a couple times downfield. I think we can do more of it now, you know, now that he's in the system for a year.
Coach, your safety, Leon O'Neal Jr., was named to the UFL, the all-UFL team. Can you just talk about the season he had and what you saw as far as his progression and growth from, you know, from camp all the way through the end here?
You know what? I really like Leon. Leon's very physical. He's passionate. He's smart. He loves to be in on everything. He wants to play special teams. I mean, he can't do it all, but he can't do enough for our team and our franchise. He's like the poster child of what you'd want us to do and what it would want us to be like. I would be surprised if someone wouldn't take a real serious look at him. His ability to play special teams, his ability to run, physical, you know, it'll be hard for an NFL team to say, well, this guy can't play in this league. I think he's one of the guys that definitely can.
Coach, this wasn't your best running performance, but you ran the ball. Even though you didn't run for a lot of yards or a lot high average, you got into the end zone on the ground and converted some key downs there for you. Passing game was a little more spread out this week. Is that more a function of the team that you played, a different game plan? But you guys were effective. You led wire to wire.
Yeah. You know what? We wanted to spread them out. You know, we thought one of the mistakes we made, our splits and everything were too condensed the first time we played them. And what it does is in condensed splits, sometimes the quarterback doesn't see, you know, the full defense. You know, they can trick him a little better with single high, double high, because, you know, we do a lot of our stuff off single high and double high. But I thought this week, I thought we spread them out good. I thought the running game wasn't as effective as it could have been. But, man, when we needed to run the ball, we ran it, you know, and I thought Cable had a really good plan on that. And then, but I thought the passing game was pretty effective. We kind of, you know, that I'm not saying we did what we wanted to do, but man, we were effective in our passing game.
Coach, what are a couple of areas of, I guess, where you feel the team can improve that you think will for sure get you guys over that hump next season?
Well, I think this. I think our offensive line must improve. You know, we just got to get better 4, 5, and 6 guys. You know, we got a couple of frontline guys, but man, we got to get better. You know, when one guy comes out, we can do better. We got to be a little bit more consistent running the football. And I think Jalen will understand our running game a little bit better. You know, sometimes, you know, we felt he guessed, and we knew he guessed because he knew it was a wrong read. You know. But I think that'll be better with another year. I think the defense, man, our defensive line, we're gonna do something. You know, we've got to get a couple guys in who can get the quarterback on the ground. You know, you're always looking at good secondary and good linebackers because those guys can play the special teams. And then I think the position that we definitely want to improve on is at our tight end position. We just got to get a blocker catcher. And those are hard to come by. The NFL don't have very many of them, so – we just got to find one that can help us out on both, and I think we'll be a playoff team if we can get those things done.
Houston Roughnecks head coach C.J. Johnson with us on the guest line. Coach, defense gave you some more big plays. You get 2 picks, one from Marvin Moody, one from Keenan Isaac. You had a couple of TFLs from Jameer Jones. You know, this was, you know, your defense really stood up for you this week. What did you think about your defense performance?
You know what? I thought they played, with the exception of big plays that they gave up during the season, and a couple of misalignments and stuff. I thought they played well, pretty good all year. You know, I like our secondary, man. I really like Moody also. Moody's a guy who could play, again, another special teamer, but man, he's a hitter. He can run. You know, it's 2 weeks in a row where, you know, he took it the distance, and most guys don't ever do that in a career. So, you know, Jim Jones had a great year, I thought. You know, I always tease him about Notre Dame, but, man, he played well. But our defense, for the most part, played pretty decent.
Coach, are there a couple of guys that, I guess, stepped into more of a leadership role this year throughout the course of the season that you like to, you know, call out for that?
Yeah, you know what? I would say this, man. Every time Kiki Chisholm said something, they really listened. You know, I would say him, you know, the Corn Elder. You know, his voice is some guys' voice carry and some guys' voice transcend and really carries through the team, the coaches and that. But man, Corn Elder was outstanding. Kiki, he really stepped up. He came from, you know, when we're in the USFL, I never knew he could talk because he never talked. And now, man, he was vocal. He was and the message was perfect because it was always about winning. Never was stats. It never was any of those. It was just plain old winning, you know. So, you know, Zach Banner did a good job leading also.
So what do you think happened for him to, you know, player to start speaking up like that before? You just said you didn't think he talked. So what do you think happened, you know, in that transition there?
So this is kind of hilarious. He was a coach. I think they went to the state championship. I can't remember the team. They went to state and didn't win the state championship. And as soon as he got in, he was like, "Coach, man, I see what you go through." You know, and so I tell him, "Hey, look, you got to be more vocal then because you're coaching and you know." He coached, I don't know, a really good football team And I think they lost the state championship game. Mm. I know they did. I don't know the name of the team, but yeah. But I think anytime you coaching, it kind of shows you a different side of everything. You get a different viewpoint, and you've seen that before, you know. He told me we had a situation. He said, man, that happened to our team, the same exact thing. You know, maybe won a game or did something, a player did something.
Coach, you said earlier, you know, you started the season 1-3. You finished 4-2, finished season 5-5, but you finished with 4 out of your last 6 with wins. What'd you say to your team after the game?
I was proud of them. You know, I was really, because when you start off like that, it's so easy to quit. You know, it's so easy to say, man, I'm not going to practice. I'm going to miss this meeting. We're not going to win anyway. And that's not what our team did. You know, they took the opposite approach. They stayed longer, got up earlier, you know, did more, stayed on the practice field. You see guys running routes after practice. You see DBs coming out and they're backpedaling, they're doing stuff. You know, they had the right attitude in wanting to win. And I'm that's why I'm so happy for them that, you know, they got to 5-5, because it wasn't an easy season. It's almost easier to get blown out, because then you say, well, we're not very good. You can point the finger everywhere. But when every game was close except the first one, it was like, man, we better than this. And they answered the bell.
He's a head coach of the Houston Roughnecks, C.J. Johnson, with us on the guest line. Coach, look, you said your team was going to improve through the season. It absolutely did. 4-win improvement from a year ago. I certainly have the team going in the right direction. I hope to talk with you some more and certainly look forward to this team's continued progression next season. Coach, thank you so much for taking some time to join us each week this season. Appreciate you and the team.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, guys. You guys have been great. Appreciate you guys.
All right. Head coach C.J. Johnson with us on the guest line. As the Roughnecks season comes to a close, big improvement from 1-9
year ago. That's a big leap.
To 5-5 this year, and now looking like they kind of know who their quarterback is. They've got a little more structure to the offense, and some guys who can actually execute that offense. You know, look, a year ago, they didn't have a whole lot of players. And I don't mean like they were short-staffed. I mean they didn't have players.
Yeah.
This year they had more players, and I think that, you know, bore itself out in the fact they were able to execute more of what the coaching staff wanted them to do. And as the year went on, they were able to get more out of them. Yeah. So hopefully next year, if they're able to keep the same quarterback, you have all the same coaches in place, they're able to take that next step and become a playoff team. Because that team's history in this city is they were one of the best teams in the XFL.
Yeah.
They were undefeated the first year. The XFL came back before COVID killed the season. Mm. They went to the title game the next time, that, you know, in 2023 when they opened. And then last year, 1-9.
Bottom fell out.
It wasn't the same franchise, but it was the same name. Now this team has shown you they've taken a step forward. They're not going to stay this 1-9 bottom-dwelling team. They win 4 of their last 6. They show a lot of improvement. I look forward to next season. And this team being a team that could compete for a playoff spot.
And like Coach said, it could have been easy for them to quit after losing those first 2 games. And especially losing that first one where it wasn't really even close. So, you know, commend them, 5-5 finish, and just barely missed the playoffs by, I believe, a game. So definitely a big leap from 1-9 to 5-5. We'll see what the progression, if that continues into next year, and hopefully they make the playoffs.
All right, coming up next, the Disney Sports, also known as the 4-Letter Network. They put out a ranking of the teams most likely to go worst to first this year. It seems like there's one of these almost every year that's a worst to first.
Yeah, pretty much.
It is the only sport where you legitimately can go worst to first in a year.
Yeah.
Who is on said list? Is this said list? Is this bona fide or BS? Next.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. Men's National Team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.